Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And Ryan is not here, but this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the mini show for the month of December 2018. Where is Ryan this week? Ryan is at the hospital. He got his phone stuck up his butt.
I was about to say, he took on a little more than he can take.
Oh, I see what you did there. So, he will not be joining us, and we are going to be recording tonight. Without him, we're going to press on. It's the original crew. The two of us here together recording a show. I don't know where I'm going with this. So, it's the mini show. So, we are going to talk about whatever we damn well please. Mostly video games, but anything is on the table. It could be Nintendo, it could be not Nintendo. But I got a few games that I can get into. You got a couple of things?
One or two.
Okay. Well, why don't I start with a game here to get us warmed up? I bought Transistor, which is a new release from November.
And you love this thing.
Oh yeah, I cannot get enough of it. I forget the name of the developer, but it's the developer of that other game that we talked about, Bastion.
Yes.
And that's a game where we talked about it maybe being maybe a little bit too mired down in systems for its own good. Like it's a game that I think wants to present itself as an RPG, but it's more of a brawler.
Yeah, I like it. It does a few fun things and everything, but it's not doing anything amazing. I'm not driven to go back to it.
Yeah. So Supergiant Games, I think, is the name of the developer, of Transistor and Bastion. And Bastion and Transistor, they're both really nice-looking games. They have a similar perspective where they're like an isometric perspective, and you are going through like these really nicely rendered worlds in Bastion. They kind of like pop in around you. Was that the case?
Yeah, in Bastion, everything... When you're running, your path would show up. It kind of like will fall there.
Right, but then once it's built, it's built. And then like when you backtrack, it's all persistent. In Transistor, you have like persistent environments throughout. And they're really nice looking. It's more of like an urban setting where you're in a cityscape and there's buildings and elevators and shit that you go around in. But unlike Bastion, I think it tries to pitch itself as a strategy game. And what you have a character who's carrying a big old sword, and what she does is she has
about Transistor.
Transistor, yes.
I thought you said Bastion.
Yes, it's yes. In Transistor, you play as this character, and each face button you can assign a different skill. So, of course, moving with the analog stick, and then your A, B, X, Y buttons are a different sword maneuver or technique that she uses. Slams her sword down, or uses an electrical attack that will spread out among different enemies. And each one of these has a cooldown. But the main crux of the game is that you enter like these kill room areas where you're shut off and you have like this limited real estate to move around in. And what you want to do is you have this extra technique where you tap one of the triggers and you basically freeze time. And within that time, you can like maneuver to a particular angle on an enemy that you want to exploit. And then set up what moves you want to use when you have time resume. And you can you have like a stamina bar, and your stamina bar will be depleted by anything from like if you move around too much, or each move that you're trying to execute requires a certain amount of stamina.
That's obnoxious.
Well, the most obnoxious thing about it isn't that particular aspect of the gameplay. It's that pretty much every battle works out the same way. So you can have a bunch of different enemy types that you can encounter. And there are some enemies that will be stationary, and their only purpose that they will serve is to restore health to other enemies. Those are really, it's really advantageous to take them out first. There are other enemies that generate shields. Other enemies kind of come at you like an attack dog would. But pretty much, no matter what type of encounter you have in the game in these kill rooms, you're playing the battles in all the exact same way. You are hiding behind some cover until an enemy gets close enough to where you can freeze time, not have to move too much to engage them in combat, use the same three or four set of moves that you did last time, unfreeze time to execute the moves. If you kill them, cool. If not, go and find another hiding spot until your cooldowns are all done and you can do the same thing over again. And every battle, and I've put about 3 hours into this game. It's not a long game. Most sources are saying it takes about like 6 or 7 hours to beat. But every battle I've had in the game plays out the exact same way. And it is dull. Because even though the enemies, they might change the number of enemies they're throwing at you, that just makes it last longer. And you have these battles of attrition. You do have an HP bar. And they're fairly generous with checkpoints. I don't think I've ever encountered a battle where I've lost and had to retraverse a lot of terrain in order to get back to it. But what will happen is when you lose a when your HP gets depleted in battle, you don't lose the battle. What you'll do is you'll lose access to one of your skills. So then instead of having 4 moves to fight these guys off with, then you have 3. And that will keep on happening. I don't know what happens when you lose them all, because usually if I've gone through a battle and lost 2 of the skills, I'm like, well, fuck, this is going to be even more boring than it already is. So I just reset to the last checkpoint. Mm. There's a pool of different skills that you can have, but you can only equip 4 at the same time. Like I mentioned, there are attacking ones. There's also ones that will like give you a dash, or one that will like spawn you a little partner buddy that you can use in battle with you. And I thought that was going to add a lot of depth, like an extra dimension of strategy into the battles. But I tried using like your little helper buddy that you can spawn, and it didn't add the layer of strategy I wanted, because this helper can't really do much except like go and like chomp at the enemy a bit. It doesn't have its own set of moves it can use. So, like, if you're in a battle and you lose 2 of your skills, you do have extras that you can swap in, and then after you hit a certain number of checkpoints, the ones you've lost will be back available to you. So it's, I guess, a way of making you experiment with different things if you're losing in battles a lot. But then, a lot like Bastion, it gets mired in its own skill system. So you have your skills, but then you can also equip those same skills as like sub-skills that power up the ones you do want to actually execute in battle. There's like this whole like other skill tree that I'm not exactly sure how I improve upon or what the effects in battle actually are. I don't know. Like this game seems to be like impressed with itself way too much and didn't bother to create really interesting gameplay.
Huh.
So again, like something we were saying about Bastion, how it has that constant narrator.
Yeah.
It's back.
Really?
But it doesn't necessarily like say everything you're doing. It's not like I swung my sword. Like it's more of like I guess there's a dude who's living in your sword or something, and he'll just like make comments about things that you encounter or battles you just had.
I mean, depending on how much he's talking, that's less obnoxious. Is it?
It is less obnoxious, but it is all the time. All the time.
Oh no! This is what's her name from Skyward Sword?
What's Fee? No, it's worse than Fee.
Oh my god!
It is worse than Fee.
I didn't think that's possible.
Yeah, well, I guess like the trade-off is Fee will actually stop you and say things, whereas this guy who lives in your sword and in Transistor, he'll just say things as you're moving along.
I mean, you always could just play the game muted.
I did at some point, because I ended up playing it in handheld a lot, because I was like I needed something else that was more entertaining, so I'd be watching a movie and trying to chip away at Transistor a little bit more. It's not likely that I'm going to finish this game. It's not fun. Like the one thing they had to do was make the actual like battle rooms that you get into interesting, and they didn't. Hmm. It is a really nice looking game. I can see why like you'd like see it in online store or the eShop and be like, oh, this game looks really pretty. I want to try this. Because it like the cityscapes and all the environmental stuff you get into, it's really nice looking. It's just not interesting to play at all. So, you got one?
Yeah, I guess talk about Monster Hunter World.
Oh, yeah.
I picked that up recently for we had like Black Friday sale at work, so I picked it up real cheap.
Right.
It was great. Yeah, I'm sure there's people listening know about this game. I've never played a Monster Hunter game before.
Which is funny, because we do a Nintendo podcast, and for the past, like, decade, Monster Hunter games have been almost exclusive to Nintendo systems.
Yeah, I've never played one before. And then they got this Monster Hunter Generations on the Switch, so now I'm thinking maybe I'll go back to play that, but it doesn't really look as good as World.
Right, well, yeah,
it's a port from the 3DS.
Right, reworked a 3DS game and put on Switch. Now, what you'll probably encounter if you go to Monster Hunter Generations, and it is an older Monster Hunter game, you'll probably notice all like the more obtuse systems within the game that they ditched in Monster Hunter World.
Yeah, this flows really nicely. And I really like how all the different systems do work with each other really well. And I was worried about a Monster Hunter game because the game is notorious for being grindy.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about Monster Hunter for, you know, the better part of the last decade was people would say, like, oh, you gotta work through the first 20 hours before it starts to get really good.
Yeah, that's rough.
That's a threat.
Yeah.
That's not like a promise or something good coming. That's a threat.
No, I like this game right out of the gate. Like, the first thing I fought, I was like, yep, I'm in. This is fantastic. I don't know how to approach this.
Oh, let me
it's such a big game, and there's such a grand scope to this. It's a little different than a Transistor, where you just kind of just go. Like, this is...
Here's the one gameplay element, which is Transistor. So let me start you off here. What weapon are you using?
I'm using a longsword.
Okay.
Which, there's a lot of different weapons. There's a lot of them I really enjoy. They are very unique, each and every one of them. They are very, very different.
You have to approach monsters differently depending on what weapon you're using.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's, like, the big, heavy, slow things. There's the small, quick guys. There's the range weapons. It's really nice. And I end up skipping around weapons a lot. But I typically use the longsword the most. It's really, really nice.
Can you swap out, like, mid-battle?
No.
Okay.
You can. You can go back to camp and go into, like, a tent and then switch your weapon. Yeah, you can't do that.
Okay, but...
You can't do mid-combat, no.
Gotcha.
You can't do that mid-combat. But the game is really nice. All the monsters are very, very unique. They're very different from each other, so you have to approach them differently.
Does that help when, you know, you have to fight them over and over again to do your loot grinding?
Well, there's not really... You don't really need to loot grind.
But you do.
I loot grinded the crap out of this game, and then I realized, oh, you don't really need to loot grind. Because there's a lot of different ways to do this. The way that the game breaks it up, there's your assigned quests, your optional investigations, and events. So they kind of do events kind of like an MMO, where they have, like... It's the holidays, so now it's the Winter Festival event. Hmm. And so they have, like, a list of certain quests, and there's like a holiday skin costume you can put on your, essentially, your go-to person that gives you the quests. They call her the Handler. There's a little snowman outfit you can put on your Palico. You literally have this little cat guy walking around supporting you. Hmm. He, like, fights with you and shit. So you can, like, turn him into a little snowman. But... Of the different quests, the way that makes it not that grindy is you're getting rewards for the grind, but it doesn't really take as much as you would think to get all the different kind of items. And, like, for instance, you're not going to farm out Jagras because the Jagras stuff is crap. You're going to kill enough to get that particular weapon that you want because it builds into other things. There's like a build tree with your weapons. So let's say...
So are you, like, taking older weapons and improving them into new ones?
Essentially, yes.
Okay.
So you'll start with an iron or a bone. And each of them have their own different sets of trees. And they build differently. So you'll start at the bone, and you'll go down and, let's say, if you have Anjanath parts, you can now build a fire longsword. But then down further along the line, because there's different, like, tier systems of it, it'll break off again, adding another monster part to do different things.
Okay.
So there's a different tiered tree system. You're building off of these weapons to make the better weapons with the parts. And so, really, like, a lot of the armor, you can grind it out to get the armor, and you can grind it out to get the monster parts. You can build different weapons of different everything. But it's not really that necessary if you just find, like, I'm doing this, and I'm using this weapon. And so you really can just hunt for what you need. But they do it nice, because...
Is there a way to, like, undo? Or does it pay off to have a lot of, like, the base weapons?
It does pay off. Like, I have, like, 5 different longswords, because they do different things. And it does help, because the nice thing that they do in this is, if you're like, shit, I went down this one tree, But if I had one that was two stages earlier, I could break it off into this other tree and this one's better. If you go back, they refund you the parts.
Oh, okay.
Which is really nice. Not the money, but the parts, which is really, really nice.
That keeps you from having to gear grind.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But it
reminds me a bit of like Final Fantasy X, where you until you have the ultimate weapons, I'm going to keep this one for this thing, I'm going to keep this weapon for this thing.
And that's pretty much it. Like, I have one sword that does poison, one does ice, fire, lightning, it's just that kind of shit.
Go planet.
I have one, I have a switch axe that does paralysis.
Oh, nice.
So that one's really cool. It's a big-ass axe that switches into a sword. And then you can, stab them with the sword and, explodes. Like, it's really weird. But, your quests, you have your assignments, which are essentially, the story quests. Optional pops up, you just kind of get them here and there as you go along the game. They're just kind of like your side quests that you'll find. And then your investigations is, there's this little research thing, and you can select investigations, and they'll change it up a little bit. Like, you'll get better rewards for doing this investigation than doing this one, even though the objective's the same. But they change it. Now you only have 30 minutes to do this, or you only can faint once, and so they change it up. So you're getting rewarded for hunting the parts that you need. So it still works out well. I did grind the crap out of things. I was like, kill 30 of these things to get everything that has to do with it.
There's more. There's bonus reward for doing, if you do gear grinding, you get more than just the gear you're grinding.
If you do through investigations and stuff, yeah. And there's different arenas, and there's just so much little shit. By finding their tracks and everything, and finding them, you unlock research for them, so then it unlocks information about the monsters, about how to kill them easier. What parts are weak and shit. You can capture them. That gives you more rewards at the end of the quest if you capture them instead of kill them.
Can you capture them and then farm them for parts?
Essentially, you can. Because
that is fucked up.
You're capturing them, and then you get a lot of their parts. And then you get another quest under optional where you fight them in the arena.
Where?
And then you go murder them in the arena and get their parts. God. It's really... It's kind of dark.
That is really fucked up.
It's a little fucked up.
Harvesting their tail and just waiting for them to grow a new one.
That's just killing them off again. Like, it's really...
It's like, I'm going to run a zoo that's also a coliseum.
But there's so many little things in order to get
many stuff. What's your end game? Do you have, really powerful monsters? Like, do you have a checklist that you're trying to cross off?
Well, I don't really know what the overall objective is. Because when you first started, there was, this really... big ass guy, size of a fucking mountain, and he was the objective for a while, and you went through your quest to do that, and now he's gone, and now there's this new thing, you don't know what this is, and the monsters are changing, so now you're doing that. But it is really epic to be in the middle of fighting something, all of a sudden something you've never seen before comes out of fucking nowhere and just attacks a thing. That happened to me earlier, and it's really nice.
Have you messed with any of the online stuff or anything?
There is some online gameplay. Like, now and then, if you post, when you select a quest to do, you're essentially posting it. And when you first log in, you get matched with 16 different people. You don't see them running around or anything. But essentially, somebody can search, and they see your quest posted, they can join in, and then you'll be running around, all of a sudden this one dude will show up. Or you can vice versa go there. And also, when you're in a quest, you can do something called an SOS flare. And that pretty much just goes, hey, come give me help. And then
somebody beat this thing for me.
Somebody kill this thing for me. I'm like, I don't want
to. You'll just have to save me. But that's cool, though. So if you're having a particularly difficult time with somebody, you're like, hey, someone who knows what they're doing,
help me out here.
Someone who's got gear 10 times better than mine, get in here.
There's flaws to it, though, because I've done this at times where I just want help because I wasn't quite strong enough to do particular things. And you only can faint 3 times before you fail the quest. And their faints count as well. So I get some dipshit who's just dying 3 times. I'm like, well... Thanks for ruining the quest for me.
That is an interesting choice to where you can send up an SOS and someone who's totally new to the game could just screw I'm going to answer that. Richard and their Excelsior that's been stomped on. It seems like if you're going to ask for help, the game would be okay, let's find someone better than him to help, not just...
Which you can do that, because when you're searching for it, you can search for an SOS flare specifically. When you do that, there's a list of preferences you can change. You can do low rank, high rank, whatever. So if you are a high rank person, you can search for low rank just to help these guys out and just get some parts. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's a lot of fun. It's really good. It's not as grindy as I thought it'd be.
That's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's a blast.
Well, why don't we take a quick break? I'm going to grab a drink. And then we'll come back with some more games.
Yeah.
So, I shelved Transistor. I haven't totally given up on it yet, but I wasn't having fun with it, so I took my gold coins, which I had about like $10 worth of gold coins on the eShop, and I downloaded Into the Breach, which is a $10 game. I think it might have been on sale for like $7 or something, but this game, Into the Breach, is...
I gotta Google it because I'm blanking on this thing.
It's a strategy game, but it's more of like Advance Wars or Fire Emblem style strategy game where it's isometric, it's on a grid, and you're taking turns moving your units and attacking and stuff like that. So it's more of a traditional strategy game.
Did I watch you play this?
Yeah, for a little bit.
I did, yes. I know what you're talking about now. I see it.
And it's a cool game. The grids are all very small, even as you get deeper into the game. And it's... if you think of like... two genres that wouldn't really match up together well, you would think it would be a strategy game and a roguelike. But this game is really a really nice melding of those two genres, because the sort of like narrative conceit is that you are people from the future trying to avoid a crisis by going back into the past and stopping this sort of monster invasion that's happening.
That always works out.
Right. Yeah, going into the past never fucks anything up.
No.
So what you end up doing is you have like these... it's a bit like SteamWorld Heist, where you have like these missions where the map is sort of randomly generated, but they're always going to have common goals or common elements within the maps. Like there's a map where the tides are always going to be coming in. Building placement is going to generally be pretty similar, but it's mixed up enough to where, like, if you're doing repeat playthroughs, which you're going to need to, you're not going through the same thing over and over again. So it's less mechanical. It's like, okay, now I got to replay the early missions again. You know exactly what you're going to do. But
that's kind of nice in these kind of games. It's some replayability. But is it like a set story that you're working through, or is it like a roguelike where you're just going through runs? Like a Wizard of Legend where you're just doing runs with this build and then
sort of both. There are like there are four islands. I guess that's the entire game, and each of the islands you'll get to play like through four, maybe five missions. And there are things happening on each island to like sort of give you a narrative. So it's less about like doing like just resetting as often as you can. You want to get further and further to figure out what's going on if you're into that kind of thing. But what'll happen is when you lose, you reset. You take your favorite character. Because you like it's like a mech warrior or mech commander, where you have you have your mechs and you have your pilots, and you get to take your favorite pilot.
So good,
yeah. I love mech commander.
They need to revive that. Mech commander on Switch.
Yep.
Get on that, Nintendo.
So you have your pilots who gain experience and level up. And so far, I really only have one main pilot. The rest are just kind of some randos. So, of course, I'm always like taking my main one back over and over again. And what you're doing is, as you progress through the game, you're leveling up your pilots, and that's persistent. You're also getting power-ups for your mechs. And so far, and you're getting new equipment, and so far, like, power-ups seem to reset every time you go back, but the sort of, like, the new equipment that you buy seems to be persistent. And I'm still trying to figure out what exactly you will always go back with you and what sort of things will reset. And I still haven't, like, finished a complete run-through of the game. I've always had to either reset or I failed. So it's not a super simple game, even though, like, the combat itself, like, is not very complex. You have, and there are a ton of different things to unlock. There's different pilots you can unlock. There's different, like, mech squads and mech types that you can unlock. There's a lot of stuff in there. I just haven't figured out how to do it all yet. But your default squad of mechs, you have a big, like, burly human-looking mech, and what that thing does is it... You can only attack adjacent squares, like in Fire Emblem. You can only attack things next to you, and it just punches it with its giant fist. And then you have two ranged units. One is a tank type unit that can attack at range, but it shoots in a straight line, and it can't, like, arch over mountains or buildings or things like that.
Oh, what happens if you have, like, a unit in between them?
It's going to hit the unit in between.
That's annoying.
And then the third unit is an artillery one, and that one can actually, like, arch its shot, so it can shoot over things. And the big crux of the game is all about positioning, because what you have is you have a pool of energy that's persistent from mission to mission, and you don't want to let that meter deplete. And that meter depletes by allowing enemies to destroy buildings in these maps, destroy your city and have human casualties. And there are missions that will allow you to replenish that, but typically, there was maybe 25% of missions will actually have the ability to gain energy back. So what you want to do is every attack that you can execute will affect the position of an enemy. So if there's an enemy about to attack a city, you can try to move your unit in between to absorb the damage yourself. Or you can attack them and try to shift their position to where they're attacking nothing. Because an enemy will set up its position next to a building. Okay, next turn I'm going to strike. And if you just move it a space over, it will still execute that attack, but either miss or hit something else. You can actually knock them around to where they're hitting each other.
Oh, that's interesting.
But you also have to be careful, because if an enemy is like a ranged unit and can hit more than a few spaces away... you might accidentally move your unit out of its line of fire to protect your unit, but then realize, like, oh shit, it's now going to attack that city, and I've already moved, I can't do anything about it. So there's this tactical complexity to what you're doing, even though the mechanics themselves are really simple. It's things that Transistor can't do, even though they're both relatively simple games. I'm really excited to see, like, what sorts of things are going to be persistent, what sort of things you unlock as you go, because, like, this sort of, like, moving things around, and it'll also tell you if an enemy's about to spawn on the map the next turn, so you can stand on the place they're about to spawn, and you might take some damage, but it'll also prevent them from coming onto the field, which can be to your advantage, because they can, like, overwhelm you in numbers very quickly. Like, there are times when you only ever have your three units, and there were four, five, six enemies on the field. Like, I can't manage all these enemies. I'm about to lose a lot of people.
Now, do you play this like you do your Fire Emblem games? When you guys die, you got reset
immediately? No. No, the only... And it seems like my main character, like the main guy that I keep carrying over from battle from run to run, he's in your fist mech, the one that punches. And I've had it to where that mech got destroyed, but he is able to go back with the reset. So it's not a situation where everybody needs to live, because, like, even when you reset the clock, when you go back, you can only take one person with you. I presume that the other two die or something. I don't know. They're just some randos. It's more like Advanced Wars in that way, where casualties don't matter. So, yeah, like, there's... Just like that one simple thing to where, like, your attacks will affect their position, it adds a level of complexity to this game that keeps it really interesting. And that is also, like, a way that using the randomly generated or I suppose procedurally generated or shifting battle maps will also make a difference as well, because it will keep it to where you're always playing the battles the same way, but you're having different outcomes and procedures in the actual battles. It's cool. I'm liking this game a lot more than Transistor, that's for sure.
Man, just every chance you get to...
I'm gonna fucking bury that game. Don't give a shit about it. So, those are the two major ones that I wanted to bring up in the show. You got another one that you want to...
I played 10 minutes of Warframe.
Oh, okay.
It's a free download on the Switch.
Yeah.
And also on my computer that I also have it on, but I never turned it on.
Hmm.
Through Twitch Prime, I got some other stuff with it. Don't know what it was. I don't know. Whatever.
They're just handing out free games.
Yeah, just here's some free add-ons for the game. Like, I don't fucking know. But, no, Warframe's a lot of fun. It's very fast-paced. There's a lot going on. It seems like... Why do you always put the cup, like, as close to the edge as you can?
Because I was trying real hard not to knock the mic, and I might have anyway. I'll find out when I'm editing. I'm not going to change it, but if you hear, like, something knocking around, that's what it was.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, they have, like, three different classes, and it seems to be, like, one's kind of like your run-of-the-mill balance kind of guy. You have, like, your...
There's a third kind of
like a mage.
Third-person shooter,
yes.
Right?
Yes, okay. Over the shoulder.
Is it like cover base, like a Gears of War kind of thing?
It's kind of like a just a run and gun kind of game like that. It's very fast paced. You're moving around a lot. Your character is very fast. A lot of slides and jumps involved with this.
Okay.
So you got like your one special ability, and then you have a first you start with just your basic crap. They give you like a sword, and then you get some kind of like throwing knives, and then you get like a gun. Again, only like 10 minutes of it. It looks very flashy. There's a lot going on. It's kind of tough to keep up at for those.
That was it.
It's definitely gonna take some time for me to adjust to it. It's very weird.
It's like an online only game, right?
You play online.
Okay.
You can play with people. It's really heavily pushed for. It's a MMO, I think.
Now, is it like,
kinda like Destiny?
Like squad based? Like you're working with people toward a common goal, or is it like a free for all?
Squad-based.
Okay.
Like, little objectives that you're working towards.
And are you fighting another group of people who are playing online, or are you, like...
No, just, you know, like, regular story things.
Okay, so it's like a cooperative type thing.
Yeah, I think.
That's kind
of
cool.
I don't know, I've only played, like, 10 minutes of the thing.
Yeah,
it looks nice, it's super flashy, there's a lot going on. I'm interested to see what else happens with it, but between Monster Hunter and the new expansion and... not expansion, the new patch came out for... World of Warcraft.
So sure.
Pretty soon the new raid's going to be coming out. Mm. And I'm still trying to level up a Death Knight. So there's just a lot going on.
I don't know what that is.
It's a guy.
It's a guy, you know what I mean? Is he like a Dark Knight?
He's a Death Knight. It's just.
Sorry. I was trying to put it in Final Fantasy terms. I forgot we were talking about Warcraft.
It's kind of tough to
describe. Okay.
It's kind of weird.
Actually, when we were talking about... Final Fantasy X, when I made that reference, it reminded me that Amazon now has Final Fantasy XII and Final Fantasy X and X-2 to pre-order. And
pre-order? What do you mean?
For Switch.
Yeah. Cool.
They don't have the listings yet for Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy IX, but they did get them for XII, the Zodiac Age, is standalone, and then X and X-2 are bundled together. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool. And they're both, like, $40.
Do I need to buy these things again? Like, do I...
See, that's the thing. Is like, I'm probably double-dipping on these because I can never bring myself to keep playing 12 on a PS2.
Yeah.
It's like, if I'm playing, like a PS1 game or a PS2 game that I've never played before, I can sit down and play it on the console. But for some whatever reason, like... I'm probably going to be more motivated to actually get deeper into and finish Final Fantasy XII if I can play it handheld.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that game is tinkering with your systems and setting up your battles before you actually go do them. And I feel like if I have that in handheld mode, like something else going on the TV as a little distraction, I'll be able to push through it.
That's exactly what you want out of a game. That's... I need somebody to push through this game. Like,
see, there are times where, like, having a handheld mode and having something else just dragging on really helps. Earthbound Beginnings, which is, of course, the prequel to Earthbound. It came out on the Wii U eShop.
I really wish it was the sequel.
Years ago. Yeah, and Mother 3 would be cool to get. Maybe one day.
No, I just wish Beginnings was the sequel.
Oh, that would be great.
That'd be funny.
So, when that game came out, that game is grindy as shit. So, it was really helpful to just play it on the Wii U gamepad and have something else going on the TV. Just kind of like move back and forth. Okay, here's a battle. Tap my commands. Okay, move. And then you gain 4 or 5 levels and then you move on. And at the time, like that was a Famicom game, an NES. And at the time, that's how they made their games longer. That's how they propositioned people with, oh, this game is going to take you 20 hours. Give us your money. There's like, okay, they had just these difficulty spikes. Like, you better sit there and grind because you're the next boss is going to be 10 levels higher than you. And it's padding is what it was at the time. And, you know, also it's kind of a cultural thing because when, especially in Japan in the 80s when, you know, you're done working a 12-hour work day and then spending 2 hours drinking with your buddies from work, you come home, you play a JRPG for an hour and a half, and then you pass the fuck out. So it's meant to be more of like this repetitious thing to where you can get yourself to sleep. Anyway, I digress. But yeah, it's cool that 10 and 10 2 are bundled together. I'm going to double dip on those because 10's a really good game, and I don't own 10 2, so...
I mean, I like 10 2, but the story is super painful. Like, the costume system was interesting. It was fun.
It's basically a job system.
Yeah, it was a job system. And it was fun. I like how they did it. And it created a lot of strategy and depth with every single fight.
Was you really able to, like, carry over skills from one job to another or something like that?
Well, like, you're in the middle of a fight and you're like, oh, crap, I'm beat up. I'll switch Yuna into my white mage job and heal up for a couple turns with her. And then Riku's got, like, 2 jobs that they can do. And then it got really interesting where they have, like, this... each of the 3 of them have this ultimate job or costume, ooh, whatever. But you have to, like, change into 2 or 3 costumes before you can change into that one.
Oh, interesting.
So the game made you change a lot.
That'd be funny, like, their ultimate job was just, like, accountant.
They're like, big-ass...
fucking...
Well, when you do the third
complex
form,
litigations.
When you do like the special form for each of them, the other 2 leave and it's just the 1. But they're like really strong and do all this other kind of shit. I don't know. But the story was just so freaking painful to get through. There's just so many little gritty crap that you just... there's a lot of stuff that was really annoying about the game, but...
Maybe they'll be skippable.
The combat was nice.
That's what counts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to actually giving that one a try, because I think you loaned me your copy, and I got like an hour into it, and then got distracted by something else.
But yeah, I'll probably end up picking that up, 7 and 9. I'll skip 12.
I wonder how they're going to handle...
I'll bar your 12.
I wonder how they're going to handle 7 and 9, if they're going to try to like sell them as their own like cards, or if they're just going to do eShop only, bundle them
together. How much are they going to be if they're individuals, though?
Individual cards, they'd have to charge at least $20.
I mean, if it's $20, you got my money. There you go.
I think it'd be cool if they bundled together on one cart, but...
If it's 40 for the 2 of them, yeah. So, like, you got me.
It's entirely possible they might be eShop only, which would be a bummer, but, you know, they're PS1 games. They're not huge.
I actually had to delete space off my Switch.
Oh, get out of here.
I have no idea how much it actually comes with.
32. Gigabyte on board, yeah.
That's not bad. I had to download some space for Warframe, because, you know, it's strictly download. Yeah. So I had to free up a little space for that.
I'm about halfway full of 128 gigabyte.
So I'm going to have to pick up a card now if I want to keep Warframe on there and pick up something else.
Yeah, thankfully the larger size, like decent size ones are pretty cheap.
Oh yeah, they're real cheap. But you can get like a micro SD for $30.
Yeah,
for like a pretty good size one.
I was actually looking at because I got my replacement DS came in. I mentioned that on a previous show, and they sent back my SD card, but the new 2DS XL takes micro instead of a standard size SD.
Oh, I didn't know it took SD on the other one.
Yeah, standard size SD on the 3DS XL.
Wow.
So The micro, I didn't have a spare micro lying around, and the SD card that I had was a 32 gig, which, you know, I felt like a digital camera lying around that I have. Like, okay, I'm going to take billions of pictures. But the 3DS games are so small that I never even got close to filling up that 32 gigabyte. But then I started downloading some games on my 3DS, and re-downloading them. I re-downloaded Pokemon X, Mario Kart 7, Luigi's Mansion, and then Zelda Link's Awakening, and that was full. Now, Pokemon and Mario Kart, those are all like fairly sizable games, but there's like a bunch of other games that I still need to download, because like I have Fire Emblem Awakening digital, and I have a ton of just Virtual Console and eShop games, and all my Ambassador games will be able to re-download. So yeah, I need to get just like I'm sure like a 16 or a 32 micro SD.
Oh, those are like $10.
Yeah,
that's nothing.
Should be more than sufficient to get all my 3DS stuff back. It's just and actually, you know what? I was about to say, just like the prospect of re-downloading them all seems like it would take forever. But you know what? When I got my new 2DS in, I started downloading Luigi's Mansion and all these other big games, and just kind of like set the system down, and I don't know, maybe an hour or two later went back to it and they're all done. So yeah, it wasn't really a huge time investment to get all the big stuff re-downloaded. Anyway, I digress. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Final Fantasy?
At this point, we were talking about Final Fantasy.
We're just kind of rambling. Why don't we do one more break, and then maybe have a little bit of a chat about Smash and Guacamelee 2?
Sure.
Have some further thoughts about both these games when we do the official show at the end of the month. But Smash Brothers did come out on the 7th.
Let's address Guacamelee first, because okay. Smash, you know, that's a bigger thing. It's a bigger deal.
Guacamelee, yeah, I can
wait.
Real well, we'll probably still have time to talk a little bit about Smash, just to give a little bit of an impression of it. But really brief impressions of Guacamelee 2, because I downloaded that game today at time of recording. I believe it came out on the 10th or the 11th, so it came out a little bit before a typical eShop game is dropped. But it is, of course, a sequel to Guacamelee 1, which I played on Wii U. Did you ever play the first Guacamelee?
I did not. I've watched some of it.
Okay.
But those kind of games, like the Metroid-style kind of games like that, I don't know, for some reason I have a hard time with them.
You know, I've actually...
I get overwhelmed by the map. I'm like, oh, fuck.
I think this game is hitting at the exact right time for me, because I've been playing a lot of RPGs and strategy games that some I didn't like Transistor, and some that I do like Into the Breach. But this game seems like most people are saying like between 8 to 10 hours long, which is going to be really nice to play a shorter game. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. And actually, to this point, it's a game hitting at the exact right time, because the day before I bought Guacamelee 2, I actually started replaying Metroid Zero Mission on my Wii U, because I was just in the mood for a Metroid-style game. So like, what's a better Metroid game than Metroid? But Guacamelee 2 is hitting that spot as well. I don't remember a ton from Guacamelee 1. I do remember, the power-up system works very similarly. It might be, the same set of power-ups, because you have, like a Metroid game, you are improving your character in order to access different areas. So, you have, things like your uppercut and your dash, and you transform into a chicken, which is basically your morph ball. It's a really silly take on the Metroid upgrade system. One thing I do notice is that they're giving you more stuff to do as your chicken than I initially remember. So you get an air dash as your chicken. You can actually improve your combat prowess as in your chicken form. And then you get a double dash.
I want to see challenges where somebody plays through the whole game as a chicken.
That would be cool. Just as soon as you can become a chicken, just stay in chicken form.
I'm now a chicken.
I mean, there might be something out there already, because this game was previously out on PS4. I think it came out a few months ago on PS4. I don't think it's been that long since it came out. But the maps are very big, like you were saying. There's a lot going on. And this game, one of the things about the first game that sticks out in my mind is that there are a lot of kill rooms, which still exist in Guacamelee 2, but I just remember the end game kill rooms in the first one were just these battles of attrition where they just keep on pouring enemy group after enemy group at you, and you were going for 5 or 10 minutes just going from kill room to kill room. I got the hang of the fighting. I know what's going on. I got it. Let's just get to the boss and get this done. Guacamelee 2 seems to emphasize more of these platforming challenges and using your different skills to navigate the world and find all your treasure chests and your power-ups, rather than having you fight a ton, which is really great, because I think even though they're giving you fighting moves, they come up with different ways to use them to make it fun to move throughout the world with them. So, and a lot of the challenges, aren't the level of difficulty as something like a Celeste, but the way that they're laying them out with having to flip between dimensions, and that will make
platforms. Yeah, there's a couple of these that look really tricky.
Yeah, there's a few of them that do get pretty challenging. And you do respawn rather quickly, so it never gets too frustrating to die over and over in these things. And there are some challenges where you might die 7, 8, 9 times before you finally get a hang of it. Especially once they start adding more power-ups. Because one thing that the game is doing really well so far is that it keeps on... Once you get a power-up, it's persistent throughout the game. They're always going to find ways for you to use it and to combine it with your other power-ups in order to overcome these challenges, which is... It's really smart design. It does make it confusing when you switch over to Smash Brothers and get used to one control scheme and then switch back to Guacamelee. okay, well, how did I jump again? Where's my grapple? But yeah, there's a bunch of different skill trees that I wonder if the game is going to be even long enough to fill out all these skill trees. They did something really dangerous, which is that they put a completion percentage for a particular section of the map on the screen, so now I can see how close to 100% I'm getting.
That's not good.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to depend on how much fun I'm having with it. Now, I'm considering trying to 100% it, but by the time I get to the end of the game, I might just be okay, let's move on.
When's the last time you 100% a game?
It's
been a while, because I remember you years ago. You're like, I'm buying this game. I'm 100%ing this. That's life.
I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on I might at a certain point. I kind of defined that these are the things I want to do in it. Like Breath of the Wild, I figured these are the things I want to do, and if I do these things, I consider this 100% done. So in Breath of the Wild,
so you're 100%.
Yeah, I got all of the shrines, and I think I got all the costume pieces in my initial run as well. But then I upgraded everything. So those are the things I wanted to do. Okay, yeah, now I'm done. Whereas Mario Odyssey, I got all of the power moons that were ones that you just don't buy. So there's 880 power moons. And then in order to get the 999, you just got to grind for coins and buy them. I was I'm not going to grind for coins and just buy these things. So 880 is the max. I'm going to get that. The last game I truly 100%, I played a ton of Xenoblade 2, And
I didn't... Mean, how do you 100% that, though? Like, shit.
Right, like, you gotta do... Like, I didn't do all the side quests. I still have four or five, like, main game side quests I haven't done. You'd have to, like, fill out all of the affinity trees for the Blades, which I did. You have to fill out the affinity trees for the Drivers, which I did. You have to do all the Merc missions. I did those. So, like, there were things that I was definitely more focused. Like, I'm going to do these things. But then when it comes to, like, games, I can't even think of...
I guess you have 100% of it now because there's new Blades that came out that you haven't.
It's true. It's true. You know, and I do want to, like, see all that, all those Blades. I want to see all that content, but I'm not going to, like, marathon that game like I used to. I'm not going to, like, play 60 hours a month of Xenoblade 2. Like, I might, like, 1 month, okay, let's find a new Blade and fill out the affinity chart and see how they are. But it probably won't ever go beyond, like, a Blade or two, or maybe a couple side quests every now and then. I'm just trying to think. Valkyria Chronicles 4... I did all of the side missions for that one. I didn't go for all of the A ranks in every mission, though. And I don't know, maybe you count that toward 100%, maybe you don't. But then also, once you get the credits, there's extra missions. There's extra content, and I haven't gotten to any of that yet. Octopath Traveler didn't 100%. I don't know.
Which, I gave that over to Jeremy and Natalie. Your brother.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently Natalie's been really
into
it. She's played even more than Jeremy. Like,
nice.
Natalie's one of those sneaky gamers you don't really think that she would be a gamer, though all of a sudden you put a game in her hands and just all hell breaks loose. Mm. Like, it's... Like, everything I've handed to them, she's just absorbed.
Now, does... So it's just about everything that she'll play? Because, like...
I haven't found a game she won't play.
So, like... Dez will also... get really into a game, but it's like you can hand her a game and she usually won't be interested. It's really rare that she gets into something, but you know, I, of course, when I got my 2DS, one of the games I downloaded, like I mentioned, was Luigi's Mansion, because I knew, like, if I told Dez all her progress was lost, she'd be like, well, shit, and start replaying it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, hey, all your progress is gone, and she was like, well, shit, and now she's playing it again. So
she played through Mario Odyssey. She's played... I don't know if she's played Breath of the Wild now.
Who, Natalie?
Yeah.
She was playing Breath of the Wild?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because they got a copy. I don't know if she's been playing through that one or not.
I thought they got the copy, like, the previous time they were here.
Yeah. They've had it for a while. There's a reason behind that one. But she's played Skyrim. They picked up Skyrim. Yeah. They play a lot of Skyrim. Octopath Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
I showed her Celeste when they were in town. So nice. They wanted to get Celeste. Like, it's like everything. They're just, yep, that's more games. Let's go.
Cool.
All right, Smash.
What were we saying? Oh, I really can't think of the last game I truly, like, 100%ed. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like,
it's probably like a 3DS game that
it
has a little bit more control over, or something like that.
Yeah, maybe there's something like a Fire Emblem Awakening to where, like, I got all the characters and, like, I guess that counts as 100%. I don't know. Anyway. But yeah, we can do a few minutes on Smash. Some initial impressions here. Guacamelee 2, I'm really liking it so far. I'll have full thoughts in the official show, because I'm sure I'll be finished with it by then. Smash. Where do we start here? Because we played with Ryan. Ryan was over here a couple days ago, and we played about 2 hours.
Yep.
Of Smash. We did a bunch of we pretty much, like, had a stock battle, and sometimes we had a free-for-all go, and sometimes we had a team battle. One time we did a team battle where it was the three of us versus five CPUs.
That was chaos.
And even though they were only, like, level 3 or 4, it was still pretty hectic.
There was just a lot going on.
Because the screen got so small. Yeah, it was tough to tell what was going on there.
And, of course, I was playing Ryu, which I never played before. It was...
Oh, yeah. That was the whole extra bit of chaos there. I typically play as Link. He's my go-to character. I have been experimenting a bit more with Samus in this initial version. Why don't we start with this? You when you begin the game, you have the 8 characters. You have
the initial roster.
Yeah, yes. the original 8. And then you unlock as you go. And there's a lot of unlocking going on. I've certainly doubled the size of the roster so far, probably a little bit more than that.
Which, one nice thing I found out about that I didn't know there was, but if you do a challenger and you lose in the challenge fight, there's actually a setting, an option you can go into or whatever, and replay the challengers. So you can still relock. You don't have to wait till they pop up on their own again.
Yeah, that's really cool. There is a weird thing, though, because I did a classic mode run through as, like, in classic mode, it's nice that, I can't remember how it was in previous versions, but it's only, like, 6 or 7 battles.
Yeah.
And then you're done with it. So, like, if you want to beat classic mode as everyone, it's not a huge investment like it used to be. But,
which I would do that if I picked up the game.
I ran through classic mode as Ike, and at the end of it, I was fighting Luigi, and he got the better of me, and I lost to him. And he wasn't in that pool of characters that we could refight. So maybe it's like maybe we have to encounter someone else, and then he'll appear within that challenge. Maybe we have to get another new challenger. I don't know. It's very strange.
That's very weird.
Or maybe I exited out to the root menu, so I'm sure everything's saved properly. It's very strange. It's very odd.
What do you think of some of the new characters?
I haven't really played as too many of them. I played a little bit as, I had like one match as King K. Rool, who, he's big and beefy and not my style.
No. But I hear he's a nightmare, just in general. Like, with the people playing online, if you come across like someone who knows what they're doing, King K. Rool, he can be just an absolute nightmare. Because he's got the projectiles, he's really big, it's tough to dodge his hits, he's got a lot of like hyper defense to him. Like, okay. It's very bizarre to fight this guy.
He does absorb a ton of damage. Like, he's really hard to ring out because just like he can be up at 170, 180% and still be recovering.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I mentioned that I was playing a bit more as Samus, because you know, there are things that are really similar between her and Link. Like, you can do a lot of zoning with the both of them. And actually, one thing I do like better with Samus is, like, along with the zoning, I also like to use some up smash attacks to keep people in the air. It is much easier to hit someone into the air and then follow up with a screw attack to do some more damage than it is to hit someone in the air and follow up with a jump spin sword. The jump spin sword can be tricky to aim with, and whereas the screw attack is a little bit easier to just get in there and do some more damage. You know, other than the two of those, you know, we also played a few matches where we all just, like, switch up the characters.
Yeah.
Because it's fun just to, like, turn on a couple of CPUs at a low level and just get wacky with a couple of characters.
I really like the Inklings. They're very interesting.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think
of them? They're bizarre. I talked with somebody today, so I found out a little bit more about them. But their initial, the regular B attack that was throwing me off. I was like, why am I spraying paint all over him? This is weird. It's like Mario's water cannon. Apparently, they take more damage if they're covered in paint.
Okay.
For like that small window.
As long as they're still covered in paint.
Yeah. Hmm. And then you're over B, you pull out a paint roller. If you hit him with that, it actually can stick him in the ground. It's like a brief stun, the very brief little stun.
Okay.
So that does a lot. But that's also dependent on your ink level. So you have to hit shield and B in order to refill your ink, and then your down B is that paint bomb that I wasn't seeing anywhere. It was confusing me.
So you actually have a maneuver when you have your shield up.
Yeah, it's like shield B, and you'll like pool under you to refill your ink like in the game.
Okay.
So you do have to, you have this little actual ink meter you have to be conscious of. But I like, they're very fast. There's a lot to do with you can't really ring them out very easily. They have a lot of recovery with that. Because their upbeat was huge. That's why I won that one that we did. That first one we did, it was a free-for-all with Ryan. It was on that city level.
Oh, yeah. Because
they have stupid recover. Like, I was just coming back from everything.
That probably seems fair, since it seems pretty complex to actually dish out a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So, giving them some longevity is fair.
Yeah.
One thing that I really like, aside, you know, from all the character talk we've been doing, is that when you do get like a killing blow, like a ring out hit, or like even if you just like pull off a really fun counter, like if someone is trying to attack you a certain way, you like dodge out of the way real quick and hit him with a smash move, you get like the zoom in and the slow motion.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. With the big crashing sound.
Yeah, and it's a really nice touch. And it seems like when you're getting that, most of the time it's a killing hit, but there are ways to get it even if they're not getting ringed out from that hit. But yeah, that's been really cool. Yeah, I mean,
I'm really interested to see how, like, the actual competitive scene is going to be with this and how people are going to handle it. I really want to see how, like, at the championships. I watched
Fox this one only, thing. Fox it's, only Final Destination?
It's very... I was watching one championship match earlier. Well, I don't think it was a champion. It was one of those matches that they do. And it was this one guy I hadn't heard about, and my buddy at work told me about him. He came into the competitive scene with the Wii U Smash with Mewtwo, and nobody was using him. And he did this move that is just... This is why... I don't want to say this. It's insane how much time they put into these games. Because
there's a level of dedication.
Yeah, it's insane. He does this hop. You know how you can jump on their head and hop and it briefly stuns them kind of thing? You know what I'm talking about? The little head hop when you just jump on somebody's head?
No, but go on.
You know, you do that in the game. Like, especially in your air, it's noticeable where you jump on somebody's head in the air and they just fall.
Oh, okay.
That kind of thing. Kind of throws them off. He does this move with Mewtwo where he head hops and does this bun combination to instantly land from it and in one motion stun them instantly with this overbeak because it's this weird move that Mewtwo does where it does a brief stun.
Yeah.
It was one fluid motion and it was just disgusting. Like, I'll show it to you after this, but it was really, really gross. But I'm excited to see people doing more stuff like that, what they're going to do with this Smash game with the new characters. I want to see, like, a competitive Inklings. I want to see King K. Rool. I want to see what this Joker from Persona 5 is. Oh, I heard briefly about. Apparently he's in the game.
Yeah, there are a couple of things from the Game Awards I guess we can mention, because, I don't know, there might not be enough news to actually do an official news section on the official show. But, like, at the Game Awards, they announced that Joker from Persona 5 is going to be in the game. And, you know, maybe that's a prelude of a Persona 5 announcement for Switch. Maybe it's just something because, like, that character is also in Persona Q2, which is a 3DS game that came out really recently in Japan. And it's just like what to, like, tie in with that franchise. And I don't know. I mean, it'd be really cool to see Persona on the Switch. But yeah, I'm not getting my hopes too high. It'd be cool. And then the other thing, just take this aside from the Game Awards, it was the announcement of Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3.
God.
Which is developed by Team Ninja, who develops a fucking Ninja Gaiden and Metroid Other M, funnily enough. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's a different perspective on, like, those X-Men Legend Marvel Ultimate Alliance game, because it's more of, like, a third-person action game rather than, like, that top-down view. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about the game to this point. Don't know, like, how much of those, like, RPG elements are in it. But, you know, we had a lot of fun with the X-Men Legend games back in the day. Those are really cool. I never played any of the Ultimate Alliance games, but from what I saw, they were a lot like X-Men Legends except with more Marvel characters.
Yeah, it was very similar, but it... I don't know. I felt like the X-Men ones flowed easier. I played a little of Ultimate Alliance, one of those ones, and I don't know. It was a little odd.
Yeah, I don't know. To, like, be super interested in this Ultimate Alliance 3 game, I'm going to need to see more X-Men. Because all they showed was Wolverine. That was cool. There's Wolverine. He's a pretty cool dude, but I need to see some. I need to see some Cyclops and Storm and Nightcrawler. Get some Colossus in there. And they'll be more interesting.
I mean, wasn't it in they had some of that in some of the other ones. Like in was it one of the X-Men, not the first one, like the second one, you can collect, like, Iron Man's armor and he becomes a playable character. Was that game, or was that another Ultimate Alliance game?
That's ringing a bell, maybe in Apocalypse.
And then there was also Ghost Rider. They worked into it.
Huh. I don't remember Ghost Rider, but I remember something about Iron Man being in that one. Yeah. Anyway,
I think they worked some people. I think it was the X-Men one. It could be another X-Men Alliance that I'm thinking of. I don't know. But you have to, like, find his armor pieces throughout these levels, and then eventually you can unlock them.
Now you'd think, like, and like the Ultimate Alliance game would just be like a default character. But anyway, what were we saying? What were we talking about? Smash.
We were talking about Smash, but you know, Is there anything else you wanted to say on that before the official show?
It's really cool that all the stages are unlocked to begin with. Yes. So you have like this big variety of
characters. Unlock all those even.
Yep.
Shit.
But I'm really enjoying like unlocking all the characters you go here. I really appreciate that there's a small roster that expands. Because if you want to experiment a little bit of the time, it's a little bit what's the opposite of overwhelming? That's not underwhelming. It's perfectly whelming. I don't know. It gives you like this interesting opportunity, like as you're slowly unlocking characters, like, okay, I just unlocked this one, so I'm gonna play as this one for a little bit. Whereas if you had like this huge roster at first, like, I'm never gonna fucking touch Captain Falcon.
I'm not touching Wario. What am I gonna do with Wario?
But like if Captain Falcon gets unlocked pretty soon, it's like, hey, Captain Falcon, maybe I'll play through a classic mode or something. Just because you just arrived. Mm-hmm. So it feels a little bit more like an event when you have like this small roster and it builds out. And I think it's going to help at least me play more of this game than I played of the Wii U game. Because I don't think, because I switched from a hard drive to a flash drive on my Wii U, I think all my activity data might have gotten lost. Maybe not, though. But anyway,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting to compare like how much time I spent with the Wii U game as opposed to this one. Because we have mentioned before, like, ever since Melee, every subsequent Smash game that's come out, I've spent less time with. And, like, I think just because there's not going to be the huge roster of characters immediately, because there are characters to unlock, I'm probably just going to, by default, spend more time with this one.
Yeah, than just I trying the to Wii get one. Everybody and slowly and
yep.
slowly but surely. Because there's nothing you're working towards in the game. You're just doing different runs.
Right. So, yeah. I recommend it.
Yes.
People should play Smash. It's a cool game.
It's kind of nuts.
But I think that's going to bring this show to a close.
Yeah.
Next up is going to be the retro show. I got to touch base with Ryan to see if he's been able to get a copy of Duke Nukem 64. I actually do have a copy of Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah.
So I'll be able to put some time into that before we record. But yeah, it'll be good to get back and do a retro show. And the other one is Bomberman 64, which we can touch on if you want, or we can bank that for a different month, because I got to look at the release list, but I don't think there's too much in the early months of 1998.
Well, we could do Nukem. I think there'd be enough. That and Diddy, I think that would be enough.
Sure.
If you guys do Nukem. If not, then we're going to bank Duke, and I guess we'll talk about Bomberman a little bit. I remember some of it.
Okay. Yeah, why don't we just plan on banking Bomberman either way? That way, we can put some time into it before. Because it's not a super expensive cartridge. But there are a ton of new games, so I don't really have a ton of time to put into retro games. Oh, I did finish Mischief Makers, which I don't know. It's not really worth bringing up again on the retro show. I got to the credits of Mischief Makers, so that game is finished. I'll probably never play it again.
Okay.
And I think it ended up like we've ranked like 13 or 14. N64 game so far, and it ended up at like number 12 or 11. I don't think I'm gonna move it.
I think that's pretty good where it is.
Yeah, I think it's in a good spot as is. I didn't hate it, but I'm also glad it's over.
That's the spirit.
Yep. And then we'll wrap it all up at the end of the month with the official show. And I'm just kind of rambling here. Instead of doing a lot of news, maybe we'll take like a further look into 2019 to talk about all the different games that are coming, not just stuff in January. But
we'll figure it out.
Till next time, everybody.
So long.